Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Pakistan, Israel, two states in the news because of threat to security and also guidance for the future. I welcome Bill Rajah of the Long War Journal, a senior fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, and our colleague, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States, Hussein Haqqani of the Hudson Institution. We begin with Pakistan because of the breaking news that is significant in that the ambassador apprised us that this was an imminent decision to be made by the legislature. The prime minister, Imran Khan, has been replaced by a temporary prime minister who's the brother of a previous prime minister. To unpack this, I begin. Mr. Ambassador, a very good day to you. My understanding is that Imran Khan used what are declared to be unconstitutional means to string out this no-confidence vote in the legislature. What now is the governance in Islamabad? Who's in charge now and how long? Good evening.
Good evening. John, the most important thing to understand is that in a parliamentary form of democracy, the prime minister does not have a fixed term. The prime minister is prime minister for as long as he has or she has the majority of support of the majority of members of parliament. Imran Khan lost that quite some time ago, but then he strung things along. He refused to accept the occurrence of the vote of no confidence, the formality of it, on grounds that it had been the result of an American conspiracy. Now, to his base, which is very extreme, nationalist, even anti-democracy elements in Pakistani society, Islamists, this appealed to them. And so this went on for a few days. Then the Supreme Court intervened after a hearing of 5 days and said, no, the Constitution is very clear. Once the vote of no confidence is tabled, it has to be voted upon. So eventually it was voted on. Imran Khan proved to be a bad loser, even though he was supposedly a sportsman. And so he didn't act in a sportsmanlike way. He asked his supporters to walk out. The speaker, who was from his party, didn't chair the session. Eventually the vote occurred and he was voted out. And just today, a new prime minister has been elected by an absolute majority of parliament. This is Mr. Shahbaz Sharif, who was previously the chief minister, or the equivalent in the American system of a governor, of Pakistan's largest province, Punjab. Has a reputation for being a good administrator, does not have much exposure to foreign policy, but his brother was prime minister before that. And it was his brother who had been removed through army and judicial maneuvering a few years ago that paved the way for Imran Khan. But Imran Khan's governance has been totally disastrous. And so there is an expectation that the new prime minister will bring back a semblance of governance. Today, the Karachi Stock Exchange has reacted very positively. It's gone up by about 1,700. The fall of the Pakistani rupee has kind of stopped, but Pakistan's underlying problems haven't disappeared just because over a 72-hour period, its prime minister has changed.
You were very careful to prepare us for this over these last several weeks by identifying the army as the major institution in Pakistan that needed to be consulted for a change of direction at the prime minister level. How does this suit the army that a brother of a man whom they were lost confidence in several years ago is now potentially in power for another year?
Well, the army has been working to try and distance itself from being seen as the kingmaker while remaining kingmaker. And so actually, by withdrawing support from Imran Khan, they just weakened him sufficiently for the other political parties to get together. From the army's point of view, it might be a good thing. The political parties that are now forming the government accounted for about 60% of the popular vote in the last election. Imran Khan's party got only 31%, yet he got us a majority through, not a majority, but a plurality through the first-past-the-post system. And the majority was cobbled together by getting smaller parties to join him. Those smaller parties defected. That's what caused the fall of his government. The new government will have all these smaller parties plus the opposition parties. So it may be able to be reflect a little more of a consensus on major issues. From the army's point of view, this government will last a year, year and a half. There will be an election. And during that period, perhaps there can be some repairing of relations with the United States, maybe initiation of a dialogue with India, all of the things that have been frozen under Imran Khan. And more importantly, some economic measures that will keep the economy going. Remember, the Pakistan military has a very fixed view of foreign relations. It has very fixed view of security policy. So there's very little room to change those. The area where they really want the civilians to function is in governance and in managing the economy. And that is where Imran Khan was failing, which is why he had to go and a new man had to come in. As far as the fact that he's the brother of the person they had removed and he would probably end the disqualifications and restrictions on his own brother, I think the army is willing to understand and accept that it has done that in the past. It removed Benazir Bhutto's father, executed him, and yet had to reconcile to the fact that she still had popular support. And so she came back into office. Then manipulation was done against her. She was removed from office. Then she came back again. There is a lot of flexibility there. So far, Pakistan is really nowhere near the ideal of being a democracy where all decisions are made transparently and by elected representatives.
Imran Khan enjoyed a great deal of enthusiastic support across a wide spectrum, because he was a cricketer, because he was glamorous. Does that support now disappear? Does that support cohere around another candidate? Is that support a challenge to the army's decision-making?
It is definitely a challenge because that support still exists. A lot of the supporters of Imran Khan are almost cult-like followers, a bit like we see in America with supporters of President Trump, who are not always deemed properly conservative by intellectual conservatives, but that's who they are. They like the guy. And now these guys are turning on the army. They're criticizing the army for not saving their guy. They're burning American flags again. But the fact remains that at the end of the day, Imran Khan will have to win another election. And the last time he won the election, it was only because there are many people in Pakistan who are called locally influential or electable, as they are called, because their families have been in a particular area, they own vast tracts of land, they have lots of people who vote as the family tells them. A lot of these people were told to align with Imran Khan before the last election, and that enabled to bolster his numbers. His cult following is a small segment of the overall population. Remember, Pakistan is more than 200 million people. So even 10% of 200 million is a lot of people. It's 20 million. But in absolute electoral numbers, that doesn't translate into anything. So the thing to watch out for is that Imran Khan is calling for protests. There have been some protests. Will he persist with the protest strategy? Will these protests paralyze the government? And if they paralyze the government and the government says, okay, we dissolve parliament and we hold a new election, can Imran Khan actually win that election? And all of those are questions, the answer to which may not necessarily be what Imran Khan wants them to be.
Bill, a very good day to you. Afghanistan, the borderland with Pakistan, is in severe distress now because of a combination of forces. The fallout from the Taliban's takeover, I read from Bloomberg, coupled with the drought and soaring wheat prices, thanks to Russia's war with Ukraine, means that some 10 million people, more than a quarter of Afghanistan's population, are near famine. For the first time, city residents, Kabul especially, are as vulnerable to starvation as rural citizens who rely on local crops for income and sustenance, according to the Afghan Analyst Network. I mention this not because we have better sources in Afghanistan, now ruled by the Taliban, but for your measure of what this change of direction means in Islamabad and the decision by the army. Is this influential in any way in Afghanistan, or the problems of the famine and the dislocation of people overwhelm any political considerations, Bill?
Yeah, I think it does impact the situation in Afghanistan immensely. Pakistan is a major driver in the political efforts to get the Taliban recognized. And with this internal political chaos in Pakistan, all the attention is absolutely going to be focused inward. There's not that outward effort to work with regional neighbors to get more aid into Afghanistan, to get the recognition the Taliban needs to get the aid flowing. And also another part of this is the war in Ukraine as well. I mean, the West particularly has dropped Afghanistan like a hot potato. So you have a confluence of events that really hurts the Afghan people here. That all of foreign aid is looking into Ukraine to support it against the illegal Russian invasion. And there is very little attention to, you know, Afghanistan, the stories of the drought and I'm sorry, the famine and the instability there. That was fronting how the West was going to work around sanctions and such to get aid there. You're just seeing so little of this now. There's so little political effort to help the people of Afghanistan, which in turn would help the Taliban as well. As you ease the suffering of the Afghan people, you open up space for the Taliban to cement its place politically in Afghanistan.
Mr. Ambassador, the famine in Afghanistan, is Nawaz Sharif's brother associated with any particular interpretation of Afghanistan? Is the army concerned in any fashion that is fresh because of the famine?
Shahbaz Sharif will actually adhere to similar views on Pakistan's external relations as almost all Pakistani political leaders have done. It's a policy that has been shaped for years. As Chief Minister of Punjab, he did not have to deal with Afghanistan. But even then, when Pakistani Taliban started attacking inside Pakistan, he at one point said that he appeals to the Taliban not to attack in Punjab, which is the region that is the most populous region in Pakistan, accounts for the largest number of votes, the largest number of soldiers, the biggest component of the civil service. And he said, don't attack here, because we by and large see the world through the same eyes as you do. Now, on Afghanistan, I think policy will continue to be made by the Pakistani military leadership. They will try to address the famine in Afghanistan the best they can. They don't want the Taliban to collapse, because they know that after the collapse of the Taliban, whoever comes to power in Afghanistan will not be as closely tied to the Pakistani military as the Taliban are. Remember, Pakistan's involvement in Afghanistan has always been justified on grounds that it makes Pakistan more secure, that anybody in Afghanistan who has close relations with India is not acceptable to Pakistan. And the Taliban, even though they are horrible in many, many ways, are more acceptable because they help Pakistan secure its northwestern flank against India. It's something that doesn't make sense to Americans, never has. It doesn't make sense to anybody in the world except the Pakistani military leadership. And I think that they will not give up on this paradigm just yet. And Shahbaz Sharif's government will continue to engage with the Taliban.
John, if I may, Hussein brought up an interesting point about Shahbaz Sharif. One of the letters seized from Osama bin Laden's compound, Atiyah Abdul al-Rahman, who was al-Qaeda's general manager at the time, he wrote a letter to bin Laden and notes that Shahbaz Sharif opened negotiations or attempted, it was in discussions with Haki Mullah Masood, then the leader of the Pakistani Taliban, and Qari Hussein was the head of the TTP, the movement of the Taliban and Pakistan's suicide teams. And he was saying exactly what Hussein said. He said, you know, stop these attacks and we'll come to some type of agreement. So this is, you know, this, it wasn't a, you know, there, and at this point in time, tens of thousands of Pakistanis were killed in terrorist operations led by the movement of the Taliban in Pakistan. And one of the things that notes in that letter is that the TTP was said, and we will keep in touch with al-Qaeda on these negotiations. So this is that complex terrorist environment that again, we in the West can't understand how someone like Shahbaz Sharif would be talking openly, or not openly, privately discussing or negotiating with monsters like the movement of the Taliban in Pakistan. Yet here we are.
Bill Rajo, Senior Fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Hussein Haqqani, former ambassador for the Pakistan nation to the United States, now at the Hudson Institution. We turn to this trouble elsewhere in Israel. I connect this to the fact that there are reports of the Islamic State activity in Pakistan and Afghanistan. Well, there are reports, however incomplete, of the Islamic State active inside Israel. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.